Hello, 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 mamas, and welcome to another episode of the Alana Song Hopes of Heaven podcast. Today, I have a very wonderful guest. I would like to welcome Judy Thurston. Am I saying that?
Thurston, yes.
Thurston, very close, but thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining me. Before I give Judy the floor to speak about the wonderful things that she's doing on her journey, I just want to read some of her introduction because she's definitely doing some wonderful things here. Okay, Judy has a genuine desire to see people live their most authentic life. In the last decade, she has helped hundreds of clients transform their mental, physical, and spiritual health. Judy helps her clients unlock their superpower. She is passionate about helping her clients heal and grow through adversity. In June of 2019, Judy experienced the tragic loss of her 18-year-old son, Jacob, to opium overdose. In the midst of her unimaginable grief, she wrote a number one best-selling book, Beautiful Tragedy: How to Build Strength and Resilience During Life's Greatest Challenges. Her book chronicles her experience and introduces the give principle. Judy is a trusted resource for grieving families. She shares tools on how to use healthy coping skills to navigate the storms of grief and uncertainty. Judy, welcome. Welcome. All us mamas across the globe, welcome you. We are excited to have you.
Oh man, what an honor. What an honor to be here. And as you read that introduction, I'm humbled because, I've been doing this grief work for over 15 years. And so I think it's God's grace sometimes that He gives you the medicine before He gives you the ailment, right? It doesn't make it any much easier, but I had these tools that I help others with that I now had to help myself with. And so that really is the book, which is a it's an interesting, unique take on the book, is you're reading from a grief expert's point of view, but also in my own process of healing in real time. You're with me in real time. And so if I can just take you back to that moment, it was June 13 of 2019, and I'm sitting in my kitchen table with my husband. My husband's a producer, director. We were going to create this 30-day meditation program that I had discovered, that I had created, because I felt like, wow, this is the missing link as a health and wellness practitioner. And all the things that I was doing, I felt like this meditation piece was the kind of the last gap of how to really help people have that just that mindfulness and connection, in times of trauma and tragedy. Well, I look over to him, and at this point, Jacob's 18. He's doing well. He's in LA. He was actually a recording artist. He was working on an album, and he was, just an amazing, amazing young man. But prior to that, since about 16, he was struggling with mental health and his depression, anxiety, addiction, and everything else. So when my husband and I were talking about this meditation practice that we were going to create and put together as a 30-day program, I look over at him and I said, I'm a little apprehensive because anytime I try to do like something like this for myself, something bad happens to Jacob. And he says, no, that nothing bad's going to happen. This is for you. We're going to do this, and this is going to help people. And then he went off to work. And about an hour later is when I get the phone call that Jacob is being rushed to the hospital, and he was found unresponsive. And Little did I know that the very tools I was getting ready to birth into the world were the tools that I needed so desperately to get through what I was going to walk through in the next, you know, season of my life. And Jacob was in the hospital for 2 weeks. He was in a coma. He never regained consciousness. But I will tell you that so many miracles happened in those 2 weeks, and I chronicle them all in my book. And I never expected to write a book. I was really just journaling, and I was sharing a little bit on social media. And after, you know, Jacob passed and I came back home to Arizona, I was in California because that's where he was. And after, you know, we had the funeral and the memorial and everything, when I came back to Arizona, I had coffee with a friend. And she says, "Judy, I've been watching your journey on social media, and you need to write a book. What your story is so inspiring and brings so much hope. You need to write a book." And to be honest with you, I was a little bit offended because here I am early in my grief journey. Yes. This is September. Jacob passed the end of June, June 27th. This is September, early September, and the last thing I'm thinking about is writing a book. You know what I mean? I'm deep in my grief. But I was polite and I said, "Oh, thank you. You know, maybe one day." And I went home. Well, that night I get woken up in the middle of the night. I don't know if it was a dream or a voice or something, but the voice says, "You are a writer." And it wasn't like an encouraging, "Oh, you're a writer, you should write a book." It was almost angry. Like, "You're a writer, stop making excuses and write this book."
Wow.
So I got up the next day, literally started writing on my phone. And 18 days later, 40,000 words later, a book was born. It literally flowed through me. And up until that point, I still wasn't sure if it was going to actually be a book or just something I needed to get out. You know, it was very cathartic. It was very healing for me to deliver. And as a grief counselor, one of the definitions of grief from the Grief Recovery Institute is grief is undelivered communication of an emotional nature. But think about that for a moment. It's not about death. It's not about these big things that happen to us. But anytime we have undelivered communication of an emotional nature, we start to experience this grief of what I wish I could have said, what I wish I could have done differently, the woulda, coulda, shoulda, right? That is actually what produces that grief that we feel. Okay. It's not the actual like event, but it's all the things underlying that we didn't get to communicate.
Oh, that's good.
So for me, writing all this down was, I thought, "Oh, this is just me, you know, processing and communicating all this grief." Well, you know, with many advisors, many people encouraging me, we, you know, I got in touch with the publisher. We were getting ready to release the book. We had pre-sales, hundreds of books were already pre-sold. And that week, that was in June of 2020. And if you can remember what was happening in June of 2020, not a whole lot. So I couldn't use the excuse of, "I don't have time to get my book out." Because at that point, all we had was time. We were all locked in our homes. All we had was time. But I felt this paralyzing fear of, "Oh my gosh, if I release this, like, it's going to be out there." And if you read my book, it's raw. I mean, it is no filters. It is real time. Even as a Christian, a lot of times it's not encouraging when you hear things like, "Oh, they're in a better place," and, "Oh, you know, God doesn't give you what you, you know, what you can't handle," like all these little, you know, cliche, Hallmark cliche, you know, greeting card sayings. Like, although it's well-meaning, it's not very helpful
at all.
And so what I felt like I needed to do, because part of my grief journey, I realized so many families, especially people dealing with mental health and addiction and suicide, is they're suffering in silence, especially in the Christian communities, right? Because I don't know, I mean, people want to put up this front that everything's good when everything is not good, right?
Yeah.
So the more that I shared authentically about my journey, the more people were inboxing me saying, yes, me too. Yes, I can relate. Yes, we're struggling too. And these were people who are pastors. These were people, you know, in leadership, in government officials, like people who are prominent leaders on the outside, but didn't feel safe to share their story. And so I really felt an obligation to put my book out there because I didn't want people to suffer alone. I wanted them to feel like, okay, if she can be that open, I can be that open, you know, and it was just a beautiful, because healing happens when we're connecting to one another. As humans, we feel that connection of this sacred space of we can share without judgment, without, you know, feeling like we're the only ones going through it, right? Exactly. So stop me. I know I'm talking a lot, but
I'm loving it. Okay. Yes.
So let me fast forward. So that June of 2020, when the editor and the publisher send me the manuscript, they're like, okay, Judy, you have one last time to check through everything. If it's good, press send, and it's going to go to print. And I'm telling you, I was like, I don't want to do it. I told my husband, turn off the website. Let's return everybody's money. I'm not releasing this book. I can't do it. And that day in particular, I remember being in the kitchen and I saw this little jar and it was a Mother's Day gift from the kids. And when I opened the jar, there were little love notes in there. Oh. And in Jacob's little handwriting, you know, Mother's Day little greetings, I just broke down and I was just, you know, as you know, heartache that it's not, you can't explain it. You can't, unless you know, right?
Unless you know, you know.
So I was in the backyard and I'm crying and I'm out there for like 2 hours just having my moment of just grief. And I get a phone call and a friend of a friend says, oh, I have a message to you from Jacob. Are you open to hearing it? Now, you know, growing up in a very kind of Christian environment, I wasn't really open or I didn't really know much about these like messages from the other side or anything like that.
Right.
Because I had really experienced grief like this, I was not in those circles where, you know, apparently this is a thing where people communicate from the other side. And so this woman said, and I was open, right? Like I wasn't skeptical. I was like, hey, if you have a message for me, I'm open to hearing it. Right.
Right.
So this is the day where I'm supposed to send this manuscript back to the editor. This is the day where I told my husband, I'm not doing it. Mm-hmm. This is the day where I find this jar in my kitchen with love notes from Jacob and the girls and right. And I'm just grieving in my backyard. And I get this phone call like at that exact same time. And so she texts me first and I said, sure, I'm open to hearing it. So she calls me and she says, I'm getting a message to you from a Jacob, a young man named Jacob. I don't know if this is going to make any sense to you, but his message is, I want you to hurry up and finish because I want my story to be told.
Wow.
Yeah. So you could imagine my face just drops and, you know, I cry even some more.
But this is
Jacob's personality, right? Like he's so pushy, like even on the other side, he's like, come on, mom.
Come on, mama.
Get with it. And I stayed up that night till 3 a.m. and, you know, went through the whole manuscript, sent it to the editor. Since then it's become a best-selling book. And I will tell you what, Angela, I don't care about any accolades of, you know, number one bestseller, anything like that. What I care about are the messages that I've gotten from teenagers who say, I was ready to take my life. And after I read your book, I decided not to.
Wow.
Teenagers who said, I've been struggling with addiction. And after I read your book, I threw my pills in the toilet and told my parents I'm ready to go to rehab. I have a gentleman in his 40s who just called me, you know, last week that I read your book in rehab and inspired me so much to keep going. Right. I was on a phone call with a young man from the UK. It was 1 a.m. here. I don't know what time it was there, but he said, I took a bunch of pills and I'm really afraid. And my dad's a single dad and I don't know what to do. And so I'm on the phone with him waiting for the ambulance and I'm just sitting with him and holding space So this is the legacy of this book and what Jacob's life
yes
has been yes. able to give back to so many. So oh. something I'm very, very proud of.
Amazing. Amazing. Just the bits and pieces that you've told us so far. Mama, what an amazing job to listen with your heart and not, like you were adamant with your husband, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. But to put that to the side and listen with your heart and know you heard the voice in your, when you woke up, you heard the voice clearly. And then to receive the message from your Jacob. And now you're starting to see. Now you're starting to see the purpose.
Mm-hmm.
The purpose of writing the book.
Right.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Wonderful. Wonderful.
And the thing is, and obviously I miss him dearly and I wish he was here every day. You know, that the physical presence.
Oh yeah.
But the spiritual presence of him guiding and still being connected. I feel so close, you know, and I feel sad for you know, as a grief counselor specialist, and I help a lot of parents. When people are not open, or when they're so full of grief that they can't even receive anything because they're so full of grief. That there might, as a possibility, they might be missing that their loved ones want to connect with them, you know? And so if I can encourage any of the listeners, I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying that, you know, it's all good, because it's very painful and it never goes away.
Never.
That's just the reality of it. I mean, even today, you know, I was having a moment of grief where I just, oh, this just overwhelming ache of just missing him and wishing he was here, like that never goes away. But also knowing that you can have a different relationship also with your loved one. So
I want to backtrack just a little bit here.
Yes.
So you were a grief counselor before Jacob moved to heaven.
Correct.
What was that? What in you decided, hey, I think I want to be a grief counselor? Or what was it? Was it someone in your life that triggered that? Or how did that come about that you were in that line? You were in that line before you really needed it for yourself.
Right, exactly. There's absolutely no rhyme or reason other than I think God just knew one day you're going to need this. I'm going to give you these tools now. There's no reason whatsoever, except for my, like, three of my girlfriends became grief recovery specialists for with the Grief Recovery Institute. And they just basically peer pressured me into doing it because they're like, this is amazing. You need to do this. This is, you know, you don't need to actually have loss, because as I said earlier, the definition of grief is this undelivered communication of an emotional nature. And also another definition of grief that's really powerful is that when you experience the end of a familiar pattern or behavior.
Yeah.
So think about that, right? Like what we knew as life was prior to 2020 is different from what life is now, right? Yeah. That was an end to a familiar pattern or behavior. And so we might not call it grief because maybe we didn't experience someone, you know, dying or something like that, but it's still grief because it's a different, we have a different, you know, life now than it was prior. Right.
Right.
And so that was really it. The long answer is that my best friends were all getting certified and they just told me, like, you need to do this. And you know, I was already in the coaching space, I was in health and wellness, and they're like, hey, this is another thing in your toolbox that will really help you to bring more value to your clients. But I didn't know the magnitude that I would need it going forward. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. And with you knowing the tools, how a grief is so overwhelming when it's, you know, we can easily look at someone else and say, oh, how sad, or I'll pray, or, you know, but when it's us, when we're in the seat, it's so overwhelming and such a fog and all of the above. How were you in using the tools that you already knew that you were teaching? How were you with that?
So this is an unpopular opinion that a lot of grievers don't like when I say this, but it is true, is that the responsibility is on the griever to ask for what they want.
Okay.
We are so grief illiterate, especially in the Western world, right? And so not only are we death illiterate, we're also death phobic, right?
Okay.
And so when somebody experiences grief, people don't know what to say. And so what do? Is they either say nothing at all, which is actually more painful than fear of saying the wrong thing.
Wrong thing,
At least if somebody says the wrong thing, again, right, the responsibility is on the griever. So if you say something that's maybe not, you know, helpful at the time, I can take responsibility and say, you know, Angela, I really appreciate your heart. I know that you want to encourage me right now, but can I just tell you right now, that is really not helpful. You know what would be really helpful for me? If you sent me some dinner right now, because I can't even think about feeding my other children right now. You know what would be really helpful for me is if you can send a crew to do laundry. I haven't done laundry in 3 weeks. Like, that takes so much humility.
It does.
To ask for what you want. But as a griever, right, it's compounded. You're grieving, and then you're isolated because people don't know what to say to you. So they think, oh, I just need to give her space. I can't tell you how many times I heard that from friends and family. Yeah. Oh, we just want to give space.
Her some space. Yeah. Yeah.
The last thing we need is space. We need connection. Healing happens when we are connected to safe people.
People. Wow.
That can just hold space for us.
Yeah.
And just, they don't have to fix. Grievers are not broken, right? Grief is a normal response, an emotional, it's part of of the whole heart, right? I talk about a lot of, in my teachings, wholehearted living. Wholehearted living doesn't mean we just get to pick and choose. Oh, gratitude. I like gratitude. I'm going to stay here. Oh, joy and blessings. I'm going to stay here. No, heartbreak and grief and sadness and pain and anger and fear. It's a whole package, right? That's what makes us human. And that's what makes everything really beautiful. You know, the title of my book is called Beautiful Tragedy.
Yeah.
Because even in the midst of tragedy, if you look, you can find beauty. You can find the blessing. Yeah. You can find the purpose to the pain.
Yes. Very, very well said. Yes. So how, I always bring in the spouses.
Yes.
What, if you don't mind, because there's plenty of moms out there with the spouses going through the grief with them also. With you being a grief coach previously, how was your husband as far as his strength? Because I'm quite sure all of your tools went out the window at just, you know, is it a, was he able to stand stronger? I'm not going to say strong. I'll just say a little bit stronger for you and not pretty much taking on the perspective. You're the grief coach, kick in, you know,
Yeah. Great question. So. And here's back to the previous question. You said, you know, as a grief counselor, were you able to use these tools? So part of the gifts of having these tools is, for me personally, being able to have a little bit more grace, because I understand what people might do or what they say or what they don't say. And so there's a little bit more grace in that people are just not equipped.
Right.
So it's okay. Right. And because I've been in this world, my family, my husband, even my kids knew about this process of delivering communication.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we were all able to do that in the hospital with Jacob, even though he wasn't coherent. You know, all of us one by one went in and shared and were able to deliver communications, you know, with him, because it's not for Jacob, it's for us, right? It's being able to release all of that energy and say what we needed to say before he passed.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it came to my husband, I had to respect and honor that we both grieve very differently.
Yes.
So there wasn't this expectation of you should be doing it like me, or him saying I should be doing it like him.
Yeah.
We had to really respect that we are two individuals experiencing the same event of losing our child, but experiencing it in very different ways.
Yeah.
And having a lot extra grace in that, you know what, if I'm a little bit short today, if I'm a little bit like just snippy and impatient, it's because I'm feeling something. Then he's going to understand, like, okay, I'm not going to take that personal because Judy's having a day, or vice versa, right? Where I kicked into like, I'm going to write a book, I'm going to go speak on podcasts, I'm going to go do this. And I was very like actively, outwardly taking action.
Yes.
Whereas Jacob or Eric was a little bit more like, I just need time to heal. And just if I need a grief day and just stay under the covers all day, and I'm going to do that, and I'm going to not judge that, and I'm going to allow that, or vice versa. If I need a grief day and I'm under the covers with my tub of ice cream, don't judge me. That's what I need today. You know what I mean? And so I'm glad that we had that understanding with each other, because to be honest, the statistics are very slim of parents who lose a child or experience something like this. The percentage of them that stay together is like 20%.
Yeah.
So the divorce rate is really high, because I believe people don't know what to do. They're not communicating. There's all this undelivered communication that just adds on to whatever the grief is. You just keep adding more and more and more, to the point where you're just totally away from each other. You know, you just grow apart from each other. So that, you know, I hope that answers your question. But
yes,
you know, and we didn't put a timetable on it either. Like, it's still, like I said, you never get over something like this. It's always going to be hard, and so we just give each other a lot of grace.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful. And your other children are going through the steps and adjusting, and
yes, my daughters are amazing. The older one, she was a lot closer to Jacob in age, and they were really, really close.
Yeah.
And so I know that, you know, it's hard. It's like losing their, you know, they're practically twins. They're 17 months apart, you know, so they were so super close. The younger one, they were a little bit further apart in age, and her disposition, she's just extremely just outgoing and extrovert and positive and just our bright little sunshine. So whenever we're grieving or whenever we're sad, you know, she'll just make us laugh, and she's just just a bright light, and you know, we just adore how much she brings us so much joy. And so yeah, like I said, everyone goes through it on their own, and we're all giving each other grace and allowing each other to be individuals in our grief. Because I think that's something, you know, especially in the Western world, right? And when you think about the five stages of grief, I don't know if you know this or if you've shared this with your audience.
Go ahead and share.
It's actually was designed for people who were terminally ill. Oh. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, you know, shared about the five stages of grief. back in what, the 70s or 80s, you know, back in the day. And it was designed for people who got a terminal diagnosis, right? Wow. So you're gonna have, you know, all these five steps of, you know, denial and anger and acceptance and whatever. All I don't even have them memorized, but you know, yeah, we've all heard it.
We've heard it. Okay? Yeah.
We've heard it. And so because that up until that time, there really wasn't any tool for grievers, the people that were left behind, they just universally packaged that as here's the five stages of grief for everybody. Mm-hmm. And so what happens when you are a griever and you go through those five stages and you think, okay, I did it all. I checked all the boxes. I want to wrap it up in a tidy bow and then I can go on with my life. And it doesn't work that way, then that's why you wonder why we feel broken. Yeah. You wonder why we feel like, oh, I must not be doing it right. Right.
Right.
But that's not what that was designed for. See, grief is cyclical, right? It's a circle. Mm-hmm. It's not a box. It's not like, let me check off these boxes. It's the circle of that, you know, you continue to go through that wholehearted, right? You're going to have times of joy when you think about your loved ones, and you're going to just have so much gratitude because of the things that you remember.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have times of even anger where you're just mad that they're not here to experience life and what you wish they could have, you know? Right. And I know both of us lost our children around the same age. And so the grief of what could have been is very real.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So I want to touch just a little bit. So you are a coach.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Just a little bit. So the moms, if they want to reach out to you, what does that look like? What does that feel like if they connect with you?
So I use the process from the Grief Recovery Institute.
Okay.
So it's a 7-week process where you are either doing it one-on-one with a trained certified counselor like myself, specialist, or you do it in a group setting.
Okay.
And I run both. I do either one-on-ones and we do them on Zoom. Uh-huh. I do them locally in person as well. But what it is, again, having a witness. A witness to your healing.
Okay.
And we're designed that way to have a witness to our healing. I just learned recently, actually, that grief tears are different than regular tears. Mm-hmm. Grief tears, when they come out, have like a little bubble. They're like, they come out like a little bubble so that you can witness and you can see, you know, versus just like flat tears. Grief tears have a little bubble. And I'm going to share something with you that I wrote in the book, actually, about grief.
I was going to ask, but good.
This is really powerful. I just love how God designed us so specifically. Mm-hmm. And it's this is from the Grief Recovery Institute. And it says here that actually the... I should have marked it. I don't have it marked. Hold on. Let me see if I can find it. Anyway, basically what it is that there is an enzyme in our tears that is a natural analgesic. So it's a natural painkiller.
Wow.
So basically when you tell people don't cry, especially our men, right? Men are told, don't cry. Or how many of us have heard, hey, stop crying, or I'm going to give you something to cry about, right? What we're doing is that we're holding them back from this natural pain reliever that we are designed with. Tears are designed to release pain.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
I'll have to find, I can't find it right now, but I'll have to share it with you. Maybe you share it with your audience, but isn't that fascinating?
It is.
And so I want to encourage us, you know, for those of us who maybe you've been on this grief journey a while and you know, and you're still crying, and then you maybe stop yourself because you're like, oh man, it's been however X amount of years, I shouldn't be crying anymore. No, let it flow. Or other people around you that might make judgments and say, aren't you over this by now? Angela, how many years has it been? Like, you know, because well-meaning people, they say stupid things sometimes.
Yes.
And just know that those tears are still part of your healing. That is you releasing that energy, because if you don't release it, it's going to go somewhere.
Yeah.
And guess what? It's going to either implode or explode. Mm-hmm. And that's not pretty. We've seen that.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes. Wow. Wow. Just wonderful. So is there anything else that you would like to share before we kind of wrap up here? Is there anything that you would like personally want moms to know that, hey, you know, I'm going through this, you know, just some kind of nuggets you want to share with us, just to know it's personal. I'm not just a counselor here.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, we're in this together. I think giving ourselves grace, a lot of grace.
Yeah.
And a lot of self-forgiveness and a lot of non-judgment. Mm-hmm. Depending on, you know, we all have a different story of how we've lost our loved ones, but there's can be a lot of guilt. There can be a lot of regret. There can be a lot of judgment of, oh, I wish I could have, should have, you know, done something different.
Yeah.
And kind of getting to a place, I know for me, the most healing thing is knowing that, hey, I did the best that I could with what I knew what to do at the moment.
Yes.
Because going back there doesn't change anything. So I don't live in the why, I live in the what. Now that this has happened, what am I going to do with this story? What am I going to do with this legacy? What am I going to do with this pain?
Oh,
what am I going to do with this? Right. And a lot of times as a grief counselor, I know that a lot of parents get stuck in the why. Why me?
Yes.
Why my child? Why? And honestly, sometimes we're never going to have those answers. And we have to be okay with that.
Yes. Oh, that's so good. That is so good. Not living in the why, but the what.
The what.
That is excellent. Because as mothers without their children, it's always why or what if. I definitely, me definitely, what if, why? You know, like your Jacob and my Alana and all other moms, you know, they carried such a light.
Yeah.
Such a light. And it's why the world needed to see their light.
Right.
Right. You know,
so, yeah. Well, I want to acknowledge you for what you're doing in bringing together a community of moms like this, or, you know, families and grievers and people who can and need a space. Like I said earlier, you know, we're grief illiterate and we're death phobic. And so a lot of times we isolate and we do this on our own because we don't know what to do or where to go. So I want to honor you that you're providing a space where people can come together and hear stories like this and hear, you know, people share, because this is what's going to heal us, is continuing to share and deliver these communications, get it out of our hearts and our minds and our bodies. So thank you. Thank you for who you're being.
Oh,
such an honor to be with you today.
Thank you. Thank you. I received that. Before I ask you the last question that I ask all my mamas, I'm just going to go back a little bit. How you said you felt like God was preparing you before you even had to get on the... Before I even had children, teenager, 17, 18, I began to study heaven, whatever I could get my hands on, heaven. So before I had children, I've always, my mind and my spirit has always been in heaven. What's going on up there? What is it? So I just, when you said that about, you know, your baby and just being in the lane before you even had to drive it. That's how I felt about heaven. And part of the reason why the podcast is titled Hopes of Heaven. I've always been in this lane. And now that I have to drive in it, it just has to be part of it. Every book on heaven, I've probably read it.
Wow.
I've probably read it, every book. So, Mama, Judy, go ahead and let us know. What are your hopes of heaven?
Oof. Well, first of all, wow, everything you were sharing, I just had the chills all over. And I think maybe Alana went before you to like just get it ready for you. Wow. Be like, okay, Mama, I'm gonna be up here first because
yes,
you love heaven. I want to make sure I get it all, you know, get it ready for you.
Yeah.
So I have a very interesting take on heaven right now in this season of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Is I believe that we bring heaven here on earth every day with how we live our life.
Wow.
And me taking Jacob with me and sharing his story everywhere I go is having that slice of heaven here on earth that I don't have to wait to experience heaven when I die, but that I can experience heaven every day that I'm here. And sadly, and I hear this from Christians even, is that they think, oh man, I just suffer here in this lifetime. And at the end, I'm going to have a reward in heaven. And I really believe that God wants us to have the reward now.
Yes.
And that happens, you know, scripture says, hey, as it is on earth, as it is in heaven, that we can have those gifts now by holding our loved ones close, by keeping their memory alive, by using the stories for our purpose of helping other people, like what you're doing now. And so I love heaven and I look forward to heaven, but I'm also having fun experiencing heaven here on earth every day that I get to wake up.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Just beautiful. Beautiful. So I just want to take this time to thank you for joining us. I want to thank you for letting us into just a little bit of your life and your journey, encouraging us, giving us nuggets of hope. And I will link all of, you can go ahead real quick if you want and just say where moms can get in touch with you if you'd like while we're on the air, but I'm going to also put the links when I post the podcast. So where can we find you?
JudyThurston.com. The easiest way. You can email me there. You can get my book there. You can see my grief classes on there. I also host retreats all over the world. I will be in Paris in June. I'll be in Sedona in September. So you can find all of that on there. And I'm very open and available as a resource. So if you want to reach out to me, you can find me on social media, send me a message. I respond to every single one.
She does.
I'm just here to love and support anyone who needs it. And, you know, I'm here for service. And,
yes. And love. Wonderful. Wonderful. Okay, Judy. Well, me and mamas all across the globe, we thank you for joining us today. All righty.
Thanks for having me. Thank you for having me.
Sure. All right.